Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take the most complex tools in AI, slice through the jargon, and hand you the perfect set of instructions to build something incredible.
Today, we are absolutely putting on our engineering hats. We're moving entirely past the theoretical, you know, the what is ASR, and diving right into the actual mechanics of constructing an automatic speech recognition engine that is tailored specifically for you.
That's right. Our listeners' goal isn't just to use some big off-the-shelf model like Stock Whisper. It's about creating something personalized, something bespoke, a model that understands their unique prosody, their accent, their highly specialized technical vocabulary, and maybe the hardest part of all, their specific code-switching pattern.
Yeah, that's a huge one.
Seamlessly weaving between, say, Hebrew and English right in the middle of a sentence.
And that's exactly where the general models just fall apart. They fail precisely where personalization matters the most. I mean, they're built for the average, for the generalized speaker.
So when you throw something unusual at them.
Exactly. When you introduce frequent mid-sentence language switching or rare proper nouns or domain-specific jargon that's only common in your field, whether that's deep learning or specialized finance, the performance of a stock ASR model just collapses.
It really is the difference between something that's just good enough for a simple memo versus something that's reliable for mission-critical dictation.
You've hit the nail on the head.
So our mission today is pure engineering. We need to unpack the necessary data volume. Like, how many hours do you truly need before the effort just starts to plateau?
Right, the law of diminishing returns.
And what's the, what I hear is a counterintuitive strategy for getting the best audio quality. And then architecturally, how do we introduce these tiny personal updates, your 10 hours of voice, without committing what researchers call catastrophic forgetting?
Without destroying the, 680,000 hours of general language knowledge Whisper was pre-trained on? It's a huge challenge.
That sounds like it could just wipe it clean.
It could, if you're not careful. This is the ultimate resource optimization problem. We're exploring that intersection of data engineering, hyperparameter tuning, and efficient deployment for local hardware, you know, for the listener's desktop GPU.
So the goal of this deep dive is explicit.
It is. To maximize your return on effort, we want to make sure that the time you spend collecting data actually translates into a reliable, fast, private, and high-performance system. We're closing that gap between a fascinating research model and a genuinely usable daily driver.
Okay, let's start by validating the effort. Why is personalizing vocabulary and accent worth what can be a pretty considerable investment of time and resources? What are the specific frustrating problems that stock ASR models have that are, you know, fundamentally solved by fine-tuning?
Well, the value of this personal adaptation is it's entirely rooted in overcoming the general model's inherent bias toward generalization. Fine-tuning really targets two massive points of failure: mixed language mastery and resolving technical vocabulary.
Okay, let's focus on that mixed language challenge first. The code switching failure point. I know so many bilingual listeners struggle with this exact issue.
Absolutely. And to understand why, you have to think about the architecture of a model like Whisper. It's got two main parts working together. You have the acoustic model, the AM, which turns sound into likely phonemes.
The basic sounds of language.
The basic sounds, right. And then you have the language model, the LM, which takes those phones and predicts the most statistically probable next word or token. Stock Whisper is trained on these distinct massive corpuses, one for English, another one for Hebrew, and so on.
And what happens when those two corpuses collide in a single sentence?
That's where it breaks. When it encounters a Hebrew word, let's say mekelet, which means a corner store, in an English sentence like, I need to run to the mekelet, the language model component just throws up its hands. It says, wait, statistically, mekelet is extremely unlikely to follow the hall in an English context.
So it panics.
It panics. And it tries to do one of two things. Either it force fits the sound into a plausible English phonetic equivalent. Maybe it hears McCullet or something strange.
I've definitely seen that happen.
Or if the acoustic evidence is just too strong to ignore, it tries to switch its entire mode of operation to Hebrew, which then completely breaks the following English grammar.
So the language model itself is actively penalizing the use of that minority language token because its own probability map says it's out of context. It's treating the word as an error, not as a valid linguistic pattern for that speaker.
Precisely. And fine-tuning fundamentally rewires that probability map. You are teaching the model your specific personal code-switching patterns.
So it becomes part of its expected world.
Exactly. The model learns that when it hears that specific acoustic sound combined with that English sentence structure, this sequence is a valid high-frequency token for you. You move those terms from being penalized, low-probability tokens to being accepted, high-probability vocabulary, all within that primary language context.
That is a phenomenal insight. You're not correcting an error. You're teaching it a new feature of your own personal language. Okay, now let's move to technical vocabulary. Why does Whisper, for all its sophistication, trip up on jargon like PyTorch, gRPC, or ROCm?
It's the same core reason. The entire general model is optimizing for the common 99% of human speech. Domain terms are, by their very nature, rare. So the model has to balance the acoustic recognition with the linguistic probability.
And that must be what leads to the homophone issue.
That is the absolute worst offender. I mean, if you say CUDA, a stock model might transcribe it as the common noun cooler or cougar or even coder, because those words are just far more statistically common in general conversation than the niche technical acronym CUDA.
It's choosing the path of least resistance, statistically speaking.
It is. Fine-tuning fixes this by introducing those terms at a disproportionately high frequency, but only within your specific training data. It essentially overrides the massive statistical priors of the general training set for your specific lexicon.
Okay, so the effort is definitely validated. You're solving these crucial, frustrating failures and dramatically improving the reliability. But what's a realistic expectation for improvement? We're not spending weeks on this just to get a 0.5% boost.
No, not at all. The goal here is to cross what I call the usability cliff. For personal fine-tuning, the expectation is a 2.5% absolute reduction in word error rate, or WER.
And just to clarify, if you start at a 10% ER...
If you start at 10% ER, dropping to 5% is a 50% relative reduction in errors. It halves the number of mistakes you have to fix.
That is massive. That's moving from, 10 errors per 100 words, which requires constant editing and is super annoying, to 5 errors per 100 words, which is often reliable enough for rapid note-taking or even first draft documentation.
Exactly. This is what transitions the system from being a cumbersome tool to a genuinely trustworthy productivity aid. But this whole discussion leads directly into the most critical strategic decision you have to make, the crossover effect.
Ah, the strategic sweet spot. The question of size. Should we be fine-tuning the massive Whisper large model, or should we focus on a smaller, more local version?
For a listener who's aiming for fast, local, and private inference on their existing hardware, even if that hardware isn't some top-of-the-line data center GPU fine-tuning the smaller models, is strategically superior, specifically Whisper Small or even Whisper Tiny.
Okay, intuitively, that sounds wrong to me. Wouldn't the largest model always capture the knowledge best? I mean, bigger is better, right?
In absolute generalized terms, yes, it is. But here's the magic of the crossover effect. The large models are already exceptional generalists. They have very little margin for error to begin with.
They're already at like 95% accuracy.
Right. They might start at a 5% error, and your fine-tuning might only manage to shave off 1-2%. It's hard to improve on your perfection. A smaller model, though, like Whisper Small, starts with a higher baseline. Well, maybe it's at 10%, precisely because it has fewer parameters to model all of generalization.
So it has more room to learn and adapt to my specific needs.
Precisely. It has more potential for growth in a specialized domain. Fine-tuning that small model on just 10-20 hours of your specific voice might drop its wear all the way down to 5-7%.
Wait a second. So you're saying a fine-tuned Whisper Small model specialized for my accent and my vocab can actually approach or even match the accuracy of a stock, general-purpose Whisper Medium model?
That is the crossover effect in its most usable, practical form. You get the tailored accuracy of a much bigger model.
But I keep the computational efficiency of the small model.
Exactly. The small models run 45 times faster than the large ones. They use dramatically less VRAM, consume less power. This entirely validates the local deployment strategy. You fine-tune small for your desktop GPU, which gives you fast, local, private results, and you fine-tune tiny for mobile or edge devices for an ultra-fast, minimal footprint. You're optimizing for personalized performance, not just absolute generalization.
That really reframes the whole goal. Okay, that makes the target crystal clear. Fine-tune small, aiming for medium-level accuracy on my voice. But that depends entirely on the data. So let's tackle the biggest hurdle. How much training data is truly necessary, and where does the effort start to plateau?
Data is the foundation of everything here. And the first rule, which is often counterintuitive for people, is that quality overwhelmingly trumps quantity.
More is not always better.
Not at all. 10 hours of high quality, diverse, and accurately transcribed data will often outperform 50 hours of low quality, homogenous, or poorly labeled audio.
So my idea of just taking a vast archive of noisy Zoom meetings, even if they're transcribed, might actually be detrimental to the final model's performance.
It absolutely can be. If the transcription quality is low, you're literally teaching the model the wrong associations between sound and text. It's garbage in, garbage out. So let's provide some concrete volume guidelines.
Yeah, let's get specific.
Okay. The minimum viable threshold is about 2 5-hours. If you're just testing the waters or you're focusing solely on incorporating, say, 50 specific technical terms, 2 to 5 hours will give you a noticeable improvement.
You'll see a difference.
You'll see a difference. You're looking at maybe a 10-20% relative whir reduction. It's a good starting point, but likely not enough for robust daily conversational use.
Okay, so what's the sweet spot?
The recommended sweet spot, and this is really the ideal balance of effort versus results for personal fine-tuning, is 10-20 hours of high-quality, diverse data. This provides solid domain adaptation and, crucially, good generalization. We'd expect a 20-40% relative whir reduction in this range.
And that's what moves the system firmly into that reliable category you mentioned.
That's the goal.
But I have to ask, why does 10 to 20 hours provide good generalization when Whisper's base model was trained on 680,000 hours? It seems like a drop in the bucket.
It's because you aren't trying to teach it all of human language from scratch. You're only teaching it the specific acoustic and linguistic profile of one speaker, using a specific lexicon in a specific set of contexts.
It's a much smaller problem.
A much smaller, more focused problem. Once the model has seen all the key phonemes, the acoustic characteristics, and the common vocabulary sequences from your voice, the marginal benefit of adding another hour starts to drop off very, very rapidly. That's the diminishing returns kicking in.
So pushing past that isn't worth the effort?
Generally not for personal use. If you push toward the production or high volume mark, we're talking 50 to 100 hours, that's necessary only if you require extremely robust performance, like for multi-speaker recognition, or if your context is incredibly complex and diverse. Think transcribing complex legal depositions with many different accents. But for an individual user, aim for 15 hours and then stop. The effort beyond that point rarely justifies the marginal gain.
I really appreciate you setting that concrete target. Now let's tackle what you call the audio quality paradox. It sounds perfectly logical. If I'm going to be using the model on the go in a busy coffee shop, shouldn't I be training it on noisy, real-world data?
It seems logical, but it's a trap. It's one of the biggest mistakes people make. The core principle of effective fine-tuning is that you must teach the model the signal, your unique voice, your accent, your vocabulary, as clearly as possible first.
And then teach it about noise.
Then you teach it robustness to noise, separately and systematically.
So if I train purely on noisy audio from the start, what's the danger? What goes wrong?
The primary danger is that the inherent variability and inconsistency of real-world noise, you know, a sudden siren in one clip, distant cafe chatter in another, it obscures the fundamental acoustic patterns of your voice. The model learns a degraded, inconsistent representation of your phones.
It's learning a fuzzy picture instead of a sharp one.
A very fuzzy picture. And it often overfits to the specific noise types that were present in your limited training set. So if you train it on the noise from Cafe A, it might fail entirely when it encounters the wind noise of condition B.
Okay, so the solution is that two-part strategy. Clean data plus controlled augmentation. Let's break down how you actually execute that.
Step one is your primary data collection. This makes up about 80% of your effort. This must be clean, high-quality audio. Use a decent microphone, record in a quiet room, and you want to be aiming for an optimal signal-to-noise ratio, or SNR, of 30 dBs or higher. This is how you establish the clear, unambiguous signature of your voice. We need to be able to hear you speak your technical terms without any interference.
And how do we ensure diversity in this clean data? It can't just be me reading a dictionary for 15 hours straight.
No, diversity is absolutely crucial for generalization, even within that quiet environment. You need to vary your speaking style. You should include spontaneous conversational speech. That's the most important for rhythm and prosody.
Like just talking to a friend.
Exactly. Then you should include some synthetic reading, which is great for clearly enunciating those specific technical terms. You need to vary your speaking speeds fast and slow. And importantly, different emotional tones, neutral, reflective, maybe slightly stressed, to capture the variability in your pitch. This prevents the model from only recognizing your voice when you're sitting calmly and reading from a script.
Right, so it learns all the different views. Okay, what's step two?
Step two is controlled augmentation. Once you have your 15 hours of pristine audio and the perfect transcription, you then use programmatic tools like Torshadio and PyTorch or other specialized open source augmentation libraries to inject controlled noise and variance into copies of that clean data.
Can you give us some concrete techniques here? What kind of variants are we actually adding?
Sure. First is noise injection. You use publicly available noise data sets like excerpts from AudioSet or the LibreSpeech Noise Corpus, and you programmatically mix them with your clean audio. The key is that you're ensuring the final SNR is precisely controlled, say, to 15 dB. This teaches the model how to separate the signal from a known controlled interference.
Anyone else?
Second, you use temporal and spectral distortion. This includes things like time stretching, speeding up, or slowing down the audio just slightly, maybe from 0.9x to 1.1x, and also pitch shifting.
So the time stretching and pitch shifting, that's simulating the natural acoustic variability in how I speak, or maybe how a cheap microphone might distort my voice.
Precisely. By augmenting the clean data, and you might create 3 or 4 augmented copies of every single clean clip, you exponentially increase the training data's robustness without ever compromising the clarity of the underlying signal. The model learns the pure voice pattern first, and then it learns how to extract that pattern from noise rather than trying to learn a degraded pattern from the very start. It's the structured learning environment that the AI needs to succeed.
Let's move into the technical fine print, the really nitty-gritty stuff. Assuming the listener is now ready to collect their 15 hours of clean, diverse audio, what are the non-negotiable specifications for those audio files before they hit the training pipeline?
These specifications are dictated by Whisper's architecture, and if you deviate from them, you're either going to introduce unnecessary downsampling or just lose quality.
Okay, what's number one?
First, the sample rate must be 16 kilohertz. Whisper was pre-trained exclusively at this rate. If you record at a higher rate, it's just inefficient, it'll get downsampled, and you're wasting file size. Recording lower means you're losing fidelity. It's a hard requirement.
And channels.
Files must be mono. If you feed it stereo files, they just get averaged, which can cause subtle phase cancellation and other acoustic artifacts that can confuse the model.
Right, and format. I'm assuming no low bitrate MP3s.
Correct. The best formats for training are WAV or FLAC because they are lossless. You want to avoid any low bitrate compression, especially MP3 below, say, 192 kilobps, because the compression artifacts just become new unwanted noise that the model has to learn to ignore.
So to recap, 16 kilohertz, mono, lossless, and quiet. That 30 dB or better SNR you mentioned.
That's the recipe.
Got it. Now let's confront the 30-second chunking constraint. Many users encounter this limitation in various applications and get really frustrated. Is this just a software setting, or is it genuinely hard-coded into the model?
It is a fundamental, hard architectural constraint of the Whisper model itself. It affects all implementations, whether they're cloud-based or local. It is, for now, unavoidable.
I think we really need to explain why this limit exists.
Yeah.
Because it's a huge point of frustration for users who are expecting seamless, hour-long transcription. So why 30 seconds?
It comes down to two limitations that are inherent to the original transformer design. First is a simple input constraint. Whisper converts the audio into a fixed size representation called a MEL spectrogram. 30 seconds of 16 kilohertz audio corresponds to a specific fixed matrix size that the model expects.
Okay, so that's part one. What's the more critical reason?
The more critical reason is that the underlying transformer architecture uses the self-attention mechanism, which scales quadratically with the input length. The computational cost is denoted as dollars.
Quadratic scaling. So if you double the audio length from 30 to 60 seconds, you're not doubling the work, you're quadrupling the computational cost and the memory requirement.
Exactly. 30 seconds was chosen by the developers at OpenAI as the practical maximum. It's a sweet spot that provides enough context for linguistic understanding while keeping the memory usage and computational demands manageable during both training and inference. Allowing 60-second inputs would quadruple the memory and processing time required just for that attention block, pushing it completely out of reach for most consumer GPUs.
So the 30-second limit is a fixed computational reality, not just some software bug. But you mentioned earlier that within that 30-second window, 20 30-second chunks are actually optimal for fine-tuning. Why not just chop everything into quick 5-second sentences? Wouldn't that be easier?
The reason is one word, prosody.
Define prosody for us, please.
Prosody is essentially the musicality of speech. It's the rhythm, the stress, the intonation, the pitch variation, and the breath patterns that structure our conversation. If you chop your training data into isolated 5-second sentences, the model learns the words, but it completely loses the conversational context.
It doesn't learn how I connect thoughts.
Exactly. The transition between ideas, the intonation shifts, the natural breathing pauses that signal the end of a thought, that is all prosody, and it's vital.
So using longer chunks is better.
Using those 20-30-second chunks allows the model to capture the natural narrative flow of continuous conversational speech. And since the listener wants to use this for dictation and note-taking, maximizing that prosody learning is key to producing natural-sounding transcription and predicting pauses correctly. You're maximizing both the linguistic and the acoustic context available to the model.
Okay, let's pivot to the final and maybe most stylistic element, punctuation. The listener noted that their punctuation style is idiosyncratic. You know, they might prefer dashes over semicolons or have specific capitalization habits for technical terms. Can fine-tuning the ASR model truly accommodate this level of personalized stylistic control?
This is a massive, massive challenge when you're using an integrated ASR model like Whisper. Whisper uses acoustic cues like pauses and pitch in its language model to predict punctuation tokens directly. You can fine-tune it for punctuation, but it suffers immensely from a problem called data sparsity.
Data sparsity, meaning there just aren't enough examples of punctuation marks compared to the millions of words the model has to learn.
Correct. Punctuation tokens are inherently rare. In your 15 hours of audio, you might generate 100,000 word tokens, but maybe only a few thousand punctuation tokens. That is not nearly enough data to reliably teach the model that your specific type of conversational pause always requires a dash instead of a period, especially when the pause that means dash is acoustically identical to the pause that means period.
So if the goal is maximum stylistic control, what's this superior, more robust architectural recommendation? How do we solve this?
The robust recommendation is to separate the concerns. Do not rely on Whisper to learn your writing style. Instead, you should fine-tune a primary Whisper small model for maximal word accuracy and then run that raw ASR output through a separate punctuation restoration model.
And this separate model learns my style from my written text, not from my spoken audio.
Exactly. You would fine-tune a lightweight transformer-based NLP model, something like a small BERT or DistilBERT, on a massive corpus of your actual written work.
So my blog posts, documentation, emails.
Anything that reflects your style.
How much written data are we talking about here?
You need significant linguistic context for this to work well, so you should aim for 50,000 to 100,000 words of your own written material. You train this NLP model using a technique called sequence labeling. You give it the raw text tokens from Whisper, and it predicts the appropriate punctuation and capitalization for each token based on the patterns it learned from your own writing. This gives you perfect stylistic control without relying on those unreliable acoustic cues.
So the final workflow is Whisper, which is optimized just for word accuracy, outputs raw text. That text then goes into my personalized NLP model, which adds all the stylistic punctuation and capitalization. That sounds like the only way to genuinely get the output to be fully personalized.
It's the most robust way for sure.
All right, let's move to the deepest part of the dive. We have our 15 hours of data ready to go into a massive, pre-trained Whisper small model. This brings us back to that paradox we raised at the start. How does 15 hours of highly specific data not cause catastrophic forgetting and just erase all that general language knowledge?
This is where the real brilliance of transfer learning is implemented. It's done through cautious mathematics and some very clever architectural constraints. We use specific techniques to ensure those 680,000 hours of knowledge are leveraged, not destroyed.
Okay, what's the first line of defense?
First, mathematically, catastrophic forgetting is actively prevented by using extremely small learning rates during the fine-tuning process. So where pre-training might use a learning rate of, say, 5e4, fine-tuning uses rates that are 10 to 100 times smaller. We're talking typically in the range of 1e5 down to 1e6.
So it's a tiny, gentle nudge rather than a system reboot.
That is the perfect analogy. It ensures that any update generated by your 15 hours of data only adjusts the massive weights of the model very, very slightly. The model maintains its general position in the complex knowledge valley it found during pre-training, but it just slowly creeps toward a specialized local optimum that's better suited for your voice.
And are we applying this gentle nudge uniformly across all the layers of the model?
Architecturally, no. And this is the second key technique. It's called layer specialization. The fine-tuning effort is disproportionately focused on the task-specific layers, which are primarily the later decoder layers and the final output projection layer.
Which is where the vocabulary tokens and the language modeling decisions actually live.
That's where they live. So the early encoder layers, the ones that learn basic universal acoustic features like identifying a vowel sound or a sibilant cellar, we want to preserve those.
Because the physics of sound haven't changed.
Exactly. We often freeze those early encoder layers entirely, or we use an even smaller learning rate for them. We assume the base model is already an expert at identifying the fundamentals of audio. Your fine-tuning is only needed to teach the model how those fundamental sounds map to your specific vocabulary and linguistic probabilities.
That makes perfect sense. Keep the foundation, just update the dictionary on top. And then there's this other technique, low-rank adaptation, or LORA, which seems to make this process even cleaner and safer. How does LORA provide an extra layer of protection against forgetting?
LORA is an incredibly elegant defense mechanism. When you use LORA, you don't adjust the original massive weight matrices, we'll call them dollar et al. You leave them completely frozen.
Untouched.
Instead, you inject these small, low-rank adapter matrices, we call them $60 right next to them. And only these tiny adapter matrices are trained. They're the ones that capture all the new custom domain knowledge.
So where do you inject them?
Typically, we target the query and value matrices, the Talor and Talabalars within the transformer's attention block. They're crucial for interpreting input context. And the rank, or torals, of these adapter matrices is tiny, often just 4 or 8.
So the model is still using the original massive weights for its core function, but these small LORA matrices are providing a custom correction layer that has been optimized on my data.
That's it, exactly. You end up training maybe 1% of the model's total parameters. This results in incredibly fast training, very low VRAM usage during the fine-tuning process, and fundamentally zero catastrophic forgetting, because the original 680,000 hours of knowledge is physically untouched.
That is fantastic. But what about when we go to deploy the model? Do we have to carry around these separate tiny matrices everywhere? That seems complicated.
Ideally, no. The best practice for inference is to perform what's called a LORA merge. This is a simple mathematical operation where the small adapter matrices, eight or dollars, are arithmetically baked back into the original large weights, dollars. The final model file size doesn't increase, but the weights now contain your specific custom knowledge all in one file, optimized for fast deployment.
Okay, speaking of optimization, let's talk hyperparameters for a moment. Beyond the learning rate, what are the other key hyperparameter ranges the listener should be aware of during their fine-tuning effort?
Two others are really crucial, the batch size and the scheduler type.
Okay, batch size, that's about VRAM, right?
It's entirely limited by your GPU's VRAM. You want the largest batch size you can possibly fit without hitting an out-of-memory error, because larger batches provide a more stable gradient update for the model. So if you have, say, 8 GB of VRAM, you might be limited to a small batch size of 4 or maybe 8. If you've got a 24 GB card, you can comfortably run a batch size of 16 or 32. It's a very practical constraint you have to work with.
And the scheduler. What does that do?
The scheduler dictates how the learning rate changes over the course of the training. For ASR fine-tuning, a cosine annealing with warm-up schedule is highly recommended.
Break that down for me.
It starts with a very low learning rate. That's the warm-up phase. Then it increases it gently to its peak rate, that 1E5 we talked about. And then it slowly cools it back down, following a smooth cosine curve as the training progresses. This prevents the model from making big, jerky movements and jumping out of that desired optimal knowledge valley, especially in the late stages of training when it's just making fine adjustments.
Got it. Okay, so we've done all this. We have a fine-tuned model file. Now, how do we get this custom knowledge onto the desktop and ensure the inference is fast, local, and works reliably, especially for our listeners who might not be running high-end NVIDIA hardware?
Right. The optimal inference engine, especially for performance and cross-platform reliability, is Faster Whisper.
And why is Faster Whisper consistently like 3 to 4 times faster than the original PyTorch implementation from OpenAI?
It's all because it's built on the CTranslate 2 backend. CTranslate 2 is an engine that was purpose-built for one thing, efficient inference optimization for transformer models. Crucially, it employs static memory allocation and ahead-of-time compilation.
What does that mean in practice?
The original PyTorch implementation is dynamic. It figures out the memory layout on the fly for every single inference, which introduces latency. CTranslate 2 pre-compiles the entire model graph into highly optimized low-level kernels for your specific hardware before you even run it.
And what makes C translate to the hero for the listener who might be using an AMD GPU with the ROCm ecosystem? That's often a pain point.
This is the critical link for them. C Translate 2 handles all the low-level kernel optimization and the hardware abstraction that PyTorch and vanilla AMD ROCm setups often struggle with. For AMD users, C Translate 2 is the practical bridge that ensures efficient memory management and robust access to the GPU's compute capabilities. It delivers that reliable 3x to 4x speedup, regardless of whether you're on NVIDIA or AMD.
Okay, we also need to talk about file formats. When we convert that fine-tuned model for use, what format should we be aiming for?
It depends on your target. For optimal desktop GPU inference, you'll target the native C Translate 2 format. But for modern edge, mobile, or CPU-only inference, you should target GGUF. That's the GGML Universal Format.
And GGUF replaced the older formats.
Yes. Right? GGUF is the current standard, and it's highly reliable because it embeds all the comprehensive metadata, the quantization methods, architecture details, versioning directly into the file header. This makes the file self-describing and highly compatible with the entire Llama.cpp and Whisper.cpp ecosystem, which is really where local optimized CPU inference lives today.
Perfect. Before we wrap the deployment section, let's address a common concern users have when they're deploying locally, the GPU utilization myth. They're transcribing, and they see their GPU usage spike to 100% during the processing bursts. Does that mean the model is too big or that their system is bottlenecked?
That is a total misconception. It's usually carried over from gaming or traditional CPU workflow monitoring. In high-speed AI inference, a GPU utilization spike to 100% during processing bursts is absolutely optimal and expected.
Can you give us an analogy to make that clear?
Think of it like a high-performance sports car.
Yeah.
When you need the power, like when that 30-second audio chunk hits the GPU, you want that accelerator floored for a fraction of a second. You want it to hit 100% utilization to ensure minimal latency.
And then it's done.
Once the calculation is done, the GPU drops right back down to zero while it waits for the next audio buffer. You want the GPU to spike to 100%. It means you are using the compute power you paid for as efficiently as possible, pushing the model at its maximum speed.
So we should only worry if the VRAM is constantly full, not if the utilization briefly hits 100%.
Correct. Your concerns are VRAM capacity and temperature. Those utilization spikes just mean efficiency. And finally, you have to remember the financial benefit here. Running a bespoke, fine-tuned, small model locally on your existing desktop hardware will save you hundreds of dollars a month compared to paying for serverless GPU fees for the equivalent speed and customized accuracy. The cost of electricity, maybe $20 a month, is negligible compared to the cloud costs.
Wow, we have achieved a true deep dive today. We've gone from the philosophical rationale for personalization all the way down to the absolute practical mechanics of data collection and deployment. Let's try to summarize the key takeaways for anyone who's ready to start this fine-tuning project.
Okay, first, the strategic choice. Fine-tuning the Whisper small or tiny models is strategically superior for local deployment. You can achieve the tailored accuracy of a stock medium model for your specific voice, but you get to retain the efficiency and speed of that smaller architecture. That's the cropped-over effect.
Second, the data strategy has to be meticulously structured. The optimal path is 10-20 hours of clean, diverse, quiet audio, which you then supplement with controlled noise augmentation. You have to teach the model the clear signal first and then teach it robustness separately.
Third, respect the architectural constraints of the model. That 30-second chunk limit is fundamental. It's because of the quadratic scaling of the attention mechanism. And you should use 20-30-second segments for your training to capture superior natural prosody and conversational context.
And finally, architecturally, catastrophic forgetting is mitigated by using those tiny learning rates that are focused on the language-specific decoder layers and often using techniques like LoRa to protect the base knowledge. And for deployment, faster Whisper using C Translate 2 is the fastest, most reliable path for cross-platform local GPU inference.
And this brings us to our final provocative thought for today. We've really established that the goal here isn't necessarily absolute, generalized, state-of-the-art accuracy. That's prohibitively expensive and typically locked into the cloud. The real measure of success for a bespoke system is usability and privacy.
So you have a choice. You can have a generic, cloud-dependent model that might hit a 5% ER on standard language, but it constantly fails on your specific technical jargon and your mixed language phrases. It requires continuous internet access, and it introduces all sorts of privacy concerns.
Or you can use your fine-tuned, bespoke, private local model with a 7% ER that perfectly handles your highly specific technical jargon, your Hebrew-English code switching, and runs instantly on your own desktop, giving you 100% control and privacy. The question really is, for your daily specialized workflow, is a perfectly tailored 7% local model better than a generic cloud-dependent 5% model?
When you look at it through the lens of actual productivity and usability, I think the answer is clearly yes. Usability always wins the day.